The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
David Quinn from the Iowan Institute has written a new book. It's called How We Killed God, and he's with us. Good evening to you, David.
Good evening.
What do you mean by how we killed God?
Well, it's a look back on the last 25 years of kind of religious and social change in Ireland through my, you know, writings over that time and all the debates and controversies that have taken place. And the reason I called it Why We Killed God, brackets and other tales of modern Ireland, is because, because if God exists, you can't kill him, but you can do the next best thing, which is to kind of kill him as an idea in your own mind and in the public mind. And I suppose as Ireland has become more and more secular, what we're seeing is kind of, you know, the pushing of religion to the margins of society as much as possible. Because I mean, like Ireland, it may be physically an island, but it can't be culturally an island. So, you know, most of Europe and secular a long time ago, so it's kind of going to happen here as well. But it's happened here later. And it's been happening, you know, a particular pace over roughly the last 25 years.
What do you mean by push to the margins?
Well, I mean, you don't... Okay, like if you go back to, we'll say, the 1950s, you know, politicians, journalists as well, used to kind of tip the hat to the bishops and the, you know, the proverbial belt of the crozier, and politicians and journalists too were scared to receive a belt of the crozier. Now politicians are very reluctant to show any deference, if that's the word, whatsoever to the church or bishops. We had...
Sorry, why should they show deference?
Well, they shouldn't. But they kind of do the opposite, which is to say they keep them, you know, very much at arm's length. So while, you know, politicians will frequently meet trade unionists, for example, or they will meet people from various NGOs, meetings between politicians and church leaders take place maybe once a year, even though they are still, you know, a big part of society, because about 36% of people still go to Mass each week. So it's still a major
and
part of society.
Politicians still go to Mass. A lot of politicians still go to religious services, which are official state services,
yeah,
for example.
But you would still have, I mean, I remember a few years ago, Dermot Ahern, I think he was Justice Minister at the time, saying, I leave my religion at the door when I'm legislating, which at one level sounds fair enough, but all politicians must bring some values to bear when they're legislating.
Yeah, you can have values without having been a religious person.
Correct, but you can also have religious values. And so why do you say the ones I'm leaving at the door of my office are specifically my religious values? Because obviously Christianity, like other religions, has a lot to say about the just ordering of society, whether you agree or disagree with it, like feminism does too. But you're never going to have a feminist minister like, we'd say, Catherine Zappone saying, I leave my feminist values at the door of my office when legislating. So why religion only? And so I think that's all a symptom of kind of the pushing to one side of religion. And by the way, I mean, I say in the book that one of the things that has helped to kill God in the way I mean, and obviously that's an exaggeration, but there's still something behind it. The church itself contributed to it, because the church was so highly authoritarian in its years of dominance. And then the scandals, of course, were so appalling and so rightly appalled people. And I mean, they broke out roughly from the mid-1990s, and then I suppose the last of the big reports was the Cloyne report of 2011 that led to the closing of the embassy to the Holy See. But that's roughly a 15, 16, 17 year period where that was a very dominant story. So the church contributed to its own decline in Ireland as a powerful force.
But maybe it was perhaps the problem that the church was far too central to the role of the state in this country. That if you go back to the era that you spoke about in the past, and you look at the pictures from the past, and you see things like bishops or cardinals throwing in the ball at the start of an All-Ireland hurling or football final. You see Taoiseach bowing over and kissing the rings of bishops, showing deference all the time. Now, surely in a republic that's supposed to take in the considerations of all different religions and those people with no religion, one of the country's big flaws was this excessive deference, and in law too, to the thinkings and teachings of the Catholic Church.
There's no question about that. And as I say, we're now living in the period of kind of, you know, reaction against that period. I mean, the Irish tend to go all in when they decide they like something. And so they went all in with Catholicism, particularly after independence in 1922. And I think the reason is because we wanted to show Britain, not only are we now politically independent from you, we're culturally independent too. And the way we're going to show we're culturally independent is by becoming sort of super Catholic, if you like. And so we went all in on the idea. And, you know, I mean, a friend of mine once said, and I think there's some truth in it, the real religion of Ireland is actually consensus. That we develop very strong ideas around whatever is kind of the agreed to set of values in a particular era. So was Catholicism for a while. Then we saw during the property boom, of course, we went all in on that as well. And those who tried to question the property boom, people like Richard Curran, got excoriated for doing it. And then, you know, the whole thing comes crashing down because we overinvested. And we overinvested in a particular type of Catholicism in this country as well. And so Catholicism itself experienced the equivalent of a crash in value.
Yeah, but you write in the book, for example, that Christians are no longer allowed a place in public debate and God is rarely spoken of in public anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no keeping you off the airwaves, David. You're invited on a regular basis. Many other people from the Iona Institute and people who are religious are very often invited to contribute on radio programmes, television programmes. You're not censored. You're not shut up. You are given a platform.
But, I mean, if you look at the kind of totality of society and public debate, I mean, there's kind of myself, and I have my Sunday Times column, and there's Breed O'Brien, who has her Irish Times column. And I set up Iona, by the way, in order to kind of set up a platform for other people to get involved in public debate with kind of a broadly Christian, not just Catholic point of view. But we're a very small voice. And again, 36% of people still go to church each week. This is according to a huge survey conducted across 18 countries, only released a few weeks ago, called the European Social Survey. So I don't think...
Sorry, and nobody's stopping them. I mean, isn't that the important point? There's no movement in Irish society to prevent people from freely attending their place of worship.
No, but you see, freedom of worship... freedom of worship. Okay, so worship takes place between the four walls of a church, all right? But that's quite a different thing to religion actually having an impact in public policy and public debate. And I think religion has no less a right to seek to influence public policy and public debate than we say feminism or socialism or social democracy or the progressive Democrats with their free market outlook back in the day. So I think everybody has a right to try and bring their view of society and justice to bear upon society, and nobody should be told at the door your values don't belong in public.
But hold on again, we take for example a highly controversial at present, the Oireachtas committee that's looking at the Eighth Amendment to the Constitution. Nobody is stopping Ronan Mullen and Matty McGrath and people like that going in and expressing their point of view. No, as it happens, they're quite good at walking out and not listening to other people's point of view. But nobody's stopping them. They are being heard. Now, they're also spreading this highly contentious position that 24 pro-abortion speakers, 4 anti-abortion speakers, leaving out conveniently that many of the 24 are merely stating facts as they see it from their professional positions, and that many others refuse to turn up. But again, the central point remains... Nobody has prevented Ronan Mullen, Matty McGrath and others from actually taking their place and speaking.
Well, if you take the entirety of the Oireachtas, so what is a bit over 200 members, is it? And if you then take the population as a whole and our attitude towards the right to life issue. So in my opinion, next year, if people are asked to make a small change to our abortion law that will allow for the hard cases like rape and fatal fetal abnormality / life-limiting conditions, I think there will be a strong yes vote. But I think if there's a big change along the lines of what the Citizens Assembly recommended, that is, we want to move towards a British-style law where there's 1 in 5 pregnancies end in abortion, I think we'll say no to that. There's actually very few politicians. I mean, like you named the three, and that's Matty McGrath, Peter Fitzpatrick and Ronan Mullen. And they're three of the only ones who seem to be publicly willing to represent a point of view that is still held, we'll see next year, but still by very many Irish people. And I don't see that properly represented in the Dáil, because politicians know that they will get a hammering from the media if they take a strongly pro-life point of view. And you see, like even the way press conferences work, Leo Varadkar or Enda Kenny back in the day will be asked questions that kind of move them towards holding a referendum on abortion, and they won't be asked questions that move them away from that position. I mean, we saw in Britain with Brexit the influence the press can have if a substantial part of it takes, in this case, a pro-Brexit position. So the Daily Mail, Daily Express, Sun and the Daily Telegraph all took a pro-Brexit position. And if they hadn't done that, that would not have passed. all media in Ireland, all major media in Ireland, take a pro-choice position and want to see repeal of the Eighth Amendment. And I think that is partly a reaction against the previously over-dominant consensus that we had in our society around the Catholic Church, because the media in that regard are not representing the totality of public opinion. And having the likes of me there or Breda O'Brien in the Irish Times.
Are you suggesting you're a token? That is tokenism accommodating you?
I certainly don't think that just the two of us in the national media are truly properly representative of all the people that would share
our
point of
view. You'll hear the truth from the Ireland Institute. There are many other people who are right in Irish newspapers, who commentate radio and television, who would have conservative points of view, who would be quite Catholic in their approach.
There's not many, though. I mean, who would have... I myself and Breda predate the Iona Institute. Anyway, I founded that about 10 years ago. So I've been writing since 94, Breda since about 97. But you'd be hard-pressed to find too many more who have kind of, you know, who write regularly once a week within the Irish media, even though, again, I mean, like, if you even take the referendum of 2.5 years ago, the marriage referendum, nearly 40% of people voted no. But that 40% was not represented in the Irish media in the run-up to that campaign. I mean, the run-up over a several-year period, and it wasn't represented in the Oireachtas either. And so, again, I mean, that's because you do see a kind of shunting aside.
Well, it's not represented in the Oireachtas. Surely politicians go up where they think the votes are, and they will represent a position which they think will get enough votes for them to be elected.
I think they also take positions that will cause them less public, at least public aggro. And taking a strongly pro-life position tends to attract plenty of heat. And I think most of them, when it comes to these things, look for the quiet life and focus on local politics. I mean, the likes of Matty McGrath has not suffered in the least from taking the positions that he takes in terms of his vote, nor has the likes of Michael Healy-Ray. Obviously, Ronan Mullen gets re-elected, I think, is about 3 times now to the Shannon. So they don't actually, in practice, suffer electorally. But they would still take plenty of grief for their positions. And most
they're well able to dish it out too. Ronan Mullen's well able to dish it out.
No, he's tough-minded. And Matty's tough-minded.
And possibly in a very offensive way as well at times. But anyway, we leave that aside for the moment. Schooling, the last thing I want to talk to you about is, because if you're worried about the lack of influence of the Catholic Church, it's certainly there in our primary and secondary schools, and there's no sign of that, Eben.
Well, I've been arguing practically since I began writing the column, which again is goes back to 1994, that there are too many Catholic schools in the country for the type of school that we're now in. And I've been a big supporter of handing whatever number it takes over to other patron bodies, for example, Educate Together or whoever it may be, in order to reflect the type of society we now are. And if that means that over time we end up with half the number of schools, you know, which are Catholic, so be it. Because at the moment, actually, you have a lot of parents sending their kids to these schools who are not practicing, a lot of the teachers aren't practicing, and it is very hard, actually, for those Catholic schools, or Protestant schools for that matter, to maintain a meaningfully Protestant or Catholic ethos.
Yeah, because
so we'd be better off if a lot of them were switched.
Yeah, you wonder why. If their children have been indoctrinated from an early time in their life in this religious way in their schools, why they don't seem to practice so much of it in adulthood.
It's a bit like the Irish language. All right, so we all learn from the age of 4 or 5 until we leave school at the age of 17 or 18, and hardly any of us speak a word of it, because actually if you're not speaking Irish at home, you're going to find it hard pressed to speak it. And if you're not very interested in learning Irish, same thing. And religion in schools has suffered the same fate. It goes in one ear and out the other.
David Quinn, thank you very much for joining
us.
David's new book is How We Killed God.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.